It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. Before we start the show this morning, I'd like to say good morning to a 91-year-old member of KAXE from Hibbing, Virgil Mary Johnson. She called this morning and said hello, and Virgil and I go way back. I think we first met face-to-face, boy, back in the, I want to say, mid-80s when I taught a couple of elder hostel classes. She was active in that group and helping with that, and it was a thrill. And I'm thrilled that Virgil is listening this morning, so I'll have to do a good job. The first note, if you're out driving around and you see a small furry animal not running too fast, this one doesn't have black fur and white stripes. It has a rather naked tail and a dark brown fur, and it is a muskrat. And in the last week, I've had two reports of muskrats, one from a fellow carrier named Tim, and one from a volunteer, on-air volunteer here, Gail Otteson. Both of them have seen muskrats out wandering around in the past week. And what's happening is that a lot of these muskrats are sort of getting out, and sometimes they, you know, they settle in a pond that is too shallow to maintain enough oxygen, and their houses, those structures that they build, that they live in, they are actually airtight, and they live usually in groups, and sometimes there are so many in there that it becomes difficult to actually breathe. The carbon dioxide levels get pretty high, and they need to get out. Get some fresh air. And because they're kind of vertically challenged, they have short legs, they select those paths that are easiest to walk on, and those are the roads. So if you're out driving around, watch out for the muskrats. They're moving. Some are out looking for love, and some are out just looking for a better place to stay. I think it was a few years back that they, you know, with the invention of these fiber optic cameras, they actually stuck one inside a beaver den, a beaver house, and were surprised to find that muskrats actually were using the beaver house too. So sometimes when oxygen gets a little scarce in the old muskrat pile, why they move into the beaver house because it's not quite as airtight. And so get a little bit of fresh air out of the beaver pile. But do be careful and give the muskrats a little extra room if you come across them. I've been watching bald eagles. I've had a couple of experiences this past week. There was something out on the ice on Wabana Lake, and I don't know if it was a volunteered pile of fish eviscera or if something actually succumbed out there. But there were two bald eagles, five ravens, and two crows. And it was pretty easy to tell that there were five ravens and two crows, because when they're all on the ground like that and sort of near one another, the difference is pretty obvious. And, of course, there one eagle was just sort of standing nearby. One eagle was standing on the pile of whatever it was and eating, and all of the ravens and the crows were just kind of like, oh, hurry up, when is it our turn? The other observation was I was loading my wood chute, which is kind of tucked up against the back of my house, and I was throwing wood in there so that I'd have wood to burn inside, and a bald eagle flew by. I looked at it, and it had a mouthful of sticks. There was actually more than one stick. There were several sticks in its beak, and it was flying toward the nest. Time for, new remodeling. I suppose they've got to get new furniture in there every year just to make it a little different, a little nicer. And while it was doing this, it was being harassed by a raven who looked like, I actually have ravens who nest on the property as well, and this guy looked like, you know, it was his job. His wife probably said, go harass that eagle, and so he went out, and he was kind of, his heart wasn't in it. He, you know, He made a couple of swoops at the eagle, but he never got too close. And he called a little bit at the eagle, but he really never said anything what I would consider in Raven language foul. But he just, you know, he was just letting the eagle know that he lived there too and that the eagle should, you know, respect him a little bit. But it was pretty humorous to watch. So lots of bald eagles in the area, and a lot of them are coming back and working on their nests. The eagles are definitely coming into the area. This is a little early. Average, you know, sort of the end of February, first part of March, most eagles will be moving back into the area and settling on their nests again. I've had a lot of encounters with ruffed grouse over the past few weeks. And this last week was no exception. I saw a lot of them out on the roads gathering little bits of gravel. And at my house, they just about every night, they're up in the aspen trees eating buds. And so I've had ample opportunities to check out the ruffed grouse. I drive by a beaver pond every day, and it's kind of a neat a little drive-by because I'm up on a ridge overlooking down at the beaver pond, and the beaver house has fallen into disrepair. I suspect that the beavers are maybe living in the bank or something. They're not living in the house. It's pretty obvious because the thing is, you know, gradually sinking lower and lower into the lake, but or into the pond. But it is a remarkable scent post for all sorts of canids, and I suspect I didn't get out of my car and walk down the hill and go look, but I suspect that there are probably wolves and fox and maybe some dogs, and if there are wolves and fox, there probably aren't coyotes, but if there are coyotes, there probably aren't fox or wolves. So whatever it is, there's definitely just, you can see these trails coming in from all directions going to this beaver house, and then at the top of the beaver house are tracks everywhere, and I'm sure what's happening there is everybody's leaving a little note about having been there and their availability, as it were, in this season of romance for canids. So if you are able to get out and look at small lakes, beaver ponds, that sort of thing, you will probably see the same sort of thing. So get out and check it out. I had an interesting experience yesterday. I've talked about hoarfrost or rime in the past. Rime is that settling of moisture in the air onto trees and shrubs, and usually it happens when warm, moist air comes from the south and settles out on the trees. Yesterday morning, until after 10 o'clock, there was lots of rime on the north side of the trees, which means then the moist air was coming from the north, which is a little bit unusual, but it has been very warm lately, and I suspect that some melting was taking place, and there was probably some moisture in the air, and yesterday morning, as the winds blew north from the north, we got this rime settling out on the north side of trees. I hope you get a chance to see that. Last couple of notes. One, snow buntings are still coming out of the snow banks along Blue Heron Road. Always surprises me. Haven't seen a lot of them this year, but now, lately, just about every morning as I drive out around 5, 5:15, here are these snow buntings flushing out of that snow. And I'm thinking to myself, boy, that got to be a cold place to spend the night. And the other note I had, I was down on the lake the other day, and I looked at the cattails, and I thought, by God, they're starting to throw their seeds. And I thought, you know, this seems odd. But I looked at several. And, in fact, I looked at more than one patch. And it seems like right now the cattails are kind of coming apart. And if you look on the lee side, on the downwind side of the cattail, you'll see they're all kind of stretched out, and the seeds are starting to tear away and break off and float. I haven't been keeping records on cattail seed dispersal, so I don't know if this is unusual, late, early, or just on time. But if you're out looking at cattails, check them out. And I looked at a bunch of them, and it looks to me like this is the time of year when they're starting to throw their seeds. So I hope that you are outside paying attention to what's happening, and for sure, send your notes along. We're always anxious to hear from you. That's our Phenology Show for this morning. Thanks for tuning in. And remember, this is listener-supported radio and you need to be one of those listener supporters. So if you haven't pledged your support to KAXE yet, and you enjoy the Phenology Show, you enjoy what happens on Tuesday mornings, you just enjoy the radio station, now's the time. Call and pledge your support. The numbers are 326-1234, 1-800-662-5799. It's time for the Talk Back Show. Talk Back is your opportunity to communicate with us. Maybe you've got an observation you'd like to share, a comment you'd like to make, or just a question you'd like to pose. It doesn't matter. We're waiting to hear from you and hope that you will take the time. Our Talk Back line is 999-9876. You can reach us by email at comments@kaxe.org. You can also reach us, you can reach me personally at my email address, which is jlatimer, that's J-L-A-T-I-M-E-R, at kaxe.org, and you can always send us a letter. We love to get your letters. And you can send them to 260 Northeast 2nd Street, Grand Rapids, Minnesota, 55744. We have heard from a bunch of you this week, including a call from Julie in Cook.
I had an American tree sparrow at my feeder yesterday, and I was just real surprised. I see them coming through more when the spring migrations are going on, but this guy seems to have come earlier than I've ever seen one here.
Yeah, this is a little bit early for tree sparrows. I'm looking, I looked at my records, and generally March and sliding into April, but you know you can't ever predict the motion of birds. They don't go all that much further south, and some of them just end up, you know, sliding back into this area. They and the fox sparrows are two birds that we see spring and fall, but none of the rest of the year, because they're basically moving through northern Minnesota to go to, in the case of the tree sparrows, southern Minnesota, and in the case of the fox sparrows, a little further south, down into Iowa and Illinois and that country. But then they turn around this time of year and they start back north, and I can see, with the really mild temperatures we've had over the last couple of weeks, I can easily understand why a tree sparrow might show up in Cook. Pretty easy to identify the tree sparrow, by the way. Clear breast, black dot right in the middle of the breast. So it's one of those birds that has that signature mark. It's not one of the, is that a tree sparrow, or is that a fox sparrow, or is that a gray cheek sparrow, or is that the Harris sparrow or the Lincoln sparrow? You know, it's one of those that comes right at you and is pretty easy to identify. So keep your eyes out. Maybe you'll be the next one to see a tree sparrow. This is a bit early, but, you know, those birds don't keep time by calendars. They keep time by weather, so, or climate. So perhaps we will be seeing them moving into this area earlier and earlier as things warm up. We heard this past week from Gail, who sent an email saying that she had seen a cardinal by her house and wondered if it was migratory or if it was going to be there for a while. And I said, no, cardinals, actually, once they're here, they stay. They don't migrate south. They come into an area, and if they find things to their liking, they will stay. I've had a number of comments about cardinals. I hear cardinals periodically around the area, especially over along the Prairie River, where it meets where it crosses under Highway 169, a little bit east of Grand Rapids, a good area to listen for cardinals. And actually right here along the banks of the Mississippi River is another good area to kind of keep your ears open for the song of the cardinal. But if you do get cardinals coming to your house, sometimes hanging a small mirror by the feeder can keep them coming back, because for some reason they like to look at themselves and they like to raise a lot of racket you know, peering at themselves. Last year, I think it was, or maybe the year before, a friend called with a message about a cardinal that actually flew into her garage so that it could sit on the side of her car and look at itself in her rear view mirror, which was pretty amazing when you think about it. But that's the way cardinals are. Black sunflower seeds are about their favorite food, so that's one thing you might want to make sure you have plenty of. And they don't seem to mind whether the feeder is covered or not, but they will come to black sunflower seeds. And they like to have some cover, you know, a spruce tree or a balsam tree nearby that can afford them a place to kind of cover and hide a little bit if they have to. We heard this week, too, from our friend Arlene up on Wabana, and she said, Greg, my husband and I saw a timber wolf at 10:30 this morning traveling across Wakeman Bay of Wabana Lake. We see many deer on the lake, so at first we thought it was a deer from several hundred yards away, but something about the way it moved caught our attention. We got out the field glasses and could then see clearly it was a big timber wolf trotting along at a pretty good clip. Unfortunately, it was traveling away from us, so it was out of sight within about 5 minutes, still going northward to the main part of the lake. Do wolves tend to travel more during the mating season? In the 4 years that we have lived here, we've only seen a timber wolf one other time on Highway 49 on the north side of Wabana Lake. And in answer to your question, Arlene, I do think that this is a time of year when you're more apt to see wolves moving because a lot of, this is the beginning of their mating season, and so that puts a lot of them out moving around. They get pretty excited and kind of careless, and a lot of junior wolves are sort of moving off and hoping to establish packs of their own in the hopes that they might actually get to mate, because a junior wolf in a pack of wolves is not likely to have the opportunity to mate and pass along its genetic codes unless the alpha wolf steps aside, and they don't often do that. We also heard this week from Egon, who was talking about wolves up in the Sumy area.
I have a pretty good path to my sugar bush by now, and the deer have been using that trail. And just this week, I found out that also timber wolves are using it. It's quite interesting. They also have a path along the trail where they mark their territory. And also last Saturday, I took a walk out in the woods to get to a small isolated lake in the hill country back there. And it was about 9 o'clock in the morning. I had to go and cross the bog to get out there. And boy, did it get hot for me going through that bog. I ended up taking my jacket off and also my cap. I couldn't believe it. It was still a little bit chilly out in the morning. When I got to that lake, there is really steep south-facing slopes, you know, on the lakeshore there. And those slopes are pretty much bare of snow already. The snow is gone, so it looks like winter is moving quite along. Till next time, Migwech.
Thanks, Egon. Good to know that the sugar bush is opened up and available, and I suspect that if this weather holds, probably another week to 10 days. Let's see, this is the 22nd today, so 10 days would put us at about the 4th of March, and that wouldn't be too far off. I would think that somewhere toward the end of the first week of March, if the weather stays mild like this, we could see some sap beginning to run. So if you are a syruper, it's probably on your mind already. You've probably been cleaning equipment and moving toward the toward tramping your trails into your woods. We heard from the Forest View Middle School Bird Club this week, and their notes include Thomas, who saw house sparrows at Walmart not too far from the school. Jason saw a hawk, but he wasn't sure which species. Adam reported only squirrels and no birds at his house. Joey celebrated his birthday with the arrival of common redpolls at his feeder. This was their first visit this winter, and they have been very rare in our area this winter. And I would add to that, they've been rare all over northern Minnesota. Few people have them in great flocks, and they're just not here this year. I don't think it means anything about the population. It probably means more about food sources. Savannah watched Blue Jays while she was sick and also saw raccoon tracks in the snow by their garbage can. Sam has seen swans flying and bald eagles are back at their nest in Nisswa. He also told us about ice formations he called dragon's teeth forming around the base of trees. Mr. Perry saw a red-tailed hawk mobbed by American crows on Saturday the 20th and their first horned lark in Crow Wing County on Sunday the 21st. And that's their report for this week. And as always, they will see you outside. Thanks very much. We heard this week from Ingrid, who called from Grand Rapids.
I was married in 1944, and we furnished our house with a lot of mahogany. Now, living up here, I've seen all kinds of trees and this and that. But what the heck is a mahogany tree, and where are they grown? Because you don't see that kind of furniture much anymore. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Ingrid, you're absolutely right. Mahogany is not very common anymore, and there are good reasons for that. Mahogany is a tropical tree. It grows in, the family and other tropical trees that have similar woods grow pretty much worldwide, but for the most part, Cuba, the Honduran mahogany, Belize has mahogany. I suspect that mahogany probably grows in Puerto Rico and places like that, probably southern or northern South America. And there is a wood that looks a lot like mahogany that grows in the Philippines called Philippine mahogany, which is actually, I think it's called Luan. But these are all trees that have similar sorts of wood. But the actual mahogany that you were seeing in the 40s and early 50s is gone. It's protected by a worldwide treaty against over-harvesting. And in fact, any old-growth mahogany that still exists is protected from cutting. But new plantations of mahogany are being grown all the time. And as those trees mature, mahogany will be available. But I suspect that for the most part, any mahogany you're likely to find will be not the original mahogany that you were familiar with from the 40s and 50s. And that's probably a good thing, because some of those trees that had such beautiful wood were harvested to the point where they really were endangered. And so mahogany is one of those trees that is protected right now by a worldwide treaty to prevent its over-harvesting. And we should be grateful for that. I, by the way, have a desk at home. My desk at home is mahogany veneer. And it's beautiful. It's lovely. And it was built in the late 40s or early 50s. And so, you know, some of that old, I guess if you like mahogany and you're entranced by it and would like to have some, I'd go to the antique stores or the old furniture stores or just keep your eyes open and watch for old types of furniture like that to come up for sale. And maybe you can pick up some that way. That's probably the best way to get it now. We heard from Mrs. Hagley's 4th, 5th, and 6th grade classes at the Emily Charter School this week.
On Saturday, Dawson saw a big red-headed woodpecker. On Friday, Annie saw 3 white-tailed deer at 7:35 a.m. On Sunday, Riley saw 2 deer in Nisswa. They were does. On Friday, February 19th, Phineas saw 3 chickadees. They were doing their spring song. On February 21st, Justine saw 2 chickadees playing tag. On Thursday, February 10th, Riley and Nasha saw a little owl. On Wednesday, February 17th, Miss Haley saw a red fox trot through the woods in her backyard. She sees them ever so often. She wonders if they have a den somewhere back there. February 22nd, about 7 o'clock, Heidi saw a squirrel run across the road. Callie saw 8 deer around 3 p.m. February 20th. Charles saw 1 tiny woodpecker pecking on wood. Holden saw 22 deer on February 20th about 1:15 p.m. John spotted 9 eagles flying in a flock on February 21st. On Sunday, February 21st, Sean noticed lots of snow was melting, and it looked like many streams coming off his roof. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you. That from Mrs. Hagley's 4th, 5th, and 6th grade classes at the Emily Charter School. The big woodpecker with the red head, I'm thinking maybe a pileated. That's the big one, and that's the one with the red head. There are some others that the red-bellied woodpecker, but you wouldn't describe it as being big. It's sort of robin-sized about. So I think maybe that was a pileated woodpecker. Lots of deer. There are a lot of deer moving right now, so it's good that they're keeping up with that. And our final note this week comes from Ed Schmidt. And Ed sent along quite a collection of pictures that he had taken from his house, including one of a barred owl sitting on the post next to the feeder watching a squirrel. And I can't imagine why that owl didn't take the squirrel unless the barred owl maybe thought it was a little bit too big for him. Maybe he didn't want to have that big of a fight. But some great pictures. They'll be on our web earlier today. And we will let you have a look at those and see what Ed is seeing from his windows. Ed, by the way, is recovering from blastomycosis, which you must make yourselves aware of. It comes from mold, which is present all over northern Minnesota. So he was working in a wood pile, and it tipped over, and lots of dust and dirt, and he thinks that might have been what got him sick. He's recovering just fine, and he's going to be all right, but we should all be aware that, you know, and he said it was just a sort of a general feeling of exhaustion that overcame him that ultimately resulted in the diagnosis of blastomycosis. But it's a dangerous disease, and other people up here have had it and have come close to expiring from it, so it's nothing to be fooling with, and it is... It's a common disease, not common. It's more common in dogs, but humans can get it. And so Ed cautions all of us to be careful and to be aware that the disease is out there. I mean, it's not like the flu or something like that that everybody's going to catch or pass on, but it is out there and you can catch it, and you want to be very careful about it because it can be fatal if it's not caught in time. So don't ignore it if you start to feel tired. We got one more call, and this one comes from our good friend Randy, and Randy sent along this note.
Pulling out of the driveway yesterday afternoon about 4 o'clock, looked over at the mountain ash, which is of course covered with berries this year, and I look up and here's 4 robins, and they're up there just gobbling mountain ash berries just as fast as they can. And I'm thinking to myself, first time ever seeing robins this early. Generally it's right around the first, second week of March. So anyway, I thought I'd check and find out if that indeed was an anomaly or what the situation is. So take care. Goodbye.
Randy, I'm thinking that what you saw are probably 4 robins that have ganged together to survive the winter in northern Minnesota, and they found your mountain ash tree, and they'll eat the berries off of that, and they'll move on to the next fruit tree that they can find. Probably found that, you know, with 4 of them out searching, they have a better chance of finding food. Oftentimes they associate with flocks of waxwings and use the waxwings to help them find sources of food. They do appreciate fruits this time of year, and if you have a robin hanging around and you can get him to come to your feeder, you might try mincing up apples or putting out raisins or something like that to try and keep them around. These are not migratory birds. These, well, in the sense that they haven't migrated from the south coming north as moving into the territory. These birds are probably birds that have decided to just tough it out up here for the winter. We've had a lot of reports of robins in the area and more each year. And these 4 must have just gathered together and hope to survive the winter and be the first ones on the territory when spring rolls in. So I think the average date for first robins is the 23rd or 24th of March. And the earliest that I have was March 7th, 1987. The latest in 1996 and again in 2000 was April 10th. And those were migratory birds. They just kind of start rolling in about that time. So that's what we know about robins so far. Perhaps that number will be, with this mild weather, perhaps we'll see migratory robins earlier this year. We'll see. That's our Talkback show for today. Remember, This station depends on you for its support, and you can call and support KAXE right now. The number is 326-1234 in the Grand Rapids area, and if you live outside the Grand Rapids dialing area, 1-800-662-5799.
You're listening to Phenology Plus on KAXE Community Radio for Northern Minnesota, 91.7 on the Iron Range, Side Lake, Federal Dam, Tamarack, and Talmoon, 89.9 in the Brainerd area, 105.3 in Bemidji, and audio streaming on the internet at KAXE.org. I'm Scott Hall with John Latimer. And coming up, Jay Anderson talks with DNR botanist Chell Anderson about snow fleas, also known as springtails. And Chell also tells us about owls that are among the first wildlife to begin their mating season in February. DNR research biologist Crystal Larson will present a program on the diversity, natural history, and population status of Minnesota's frogs and toads. The program is tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, at the Northland Arboretum in Brainerd. It's free and open to everyone. Call KAXE for more information, 218-326-1234 or 800-662-5799. The first conference of Northwoods Phenologists of Minnesota and Wisconsin is this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and it's at the Wolf Ridge Environmental Learning Center on the North Shore near Finland, Minnesota. The conference will cover the phenology of our region and how we can observe it, record it, and teach it. Call KAXE for more information. Some of the highlights of this week's conference include keynote speakers Friday, Dr. Rebecca Anderson. She's from the University of Minnesota School of Forestry. She'll talk about using phenology to monitor forest health. Then on Saturday, Dr. Jay Austin of UMD's Large Lake Observatory will speak on the seasonal phenology of Lake Superior. Again, for more information, call KAXE 218-326-1234. Support for programming on KAXE comes from our listener members, and we also want to thank the Bonner Eye Clinic in Grand Rapids. At the Bonner Eye Clinic, Drs. Bonner, Mariano, and Ken Cannon have served the eye care needs of Grand Rapids, Itasca County, and the Iron Range for over 45 years. Located on 1542 Golf Course Road, the Bonner Eye Clinic is proud to support KAXE. We also have support from Dale's Auto Body in Grand Rapids. For 25 years, Dale's Auto Body has offered a facility where repairs are done by professionals to factory specifications. Dale's Auto Body strives to meet and exceed customer expectations. Dale's Auto Body and the Bonner Eye Clinic encourage you to become a member of Northern Community Radio, KAXE. It's our Fun Spiel fundraiser going on right now, and you can support Phenology Plus and all the other great programming you hear on KAXE, the music, the diversity of voices, and conversation we have about life and culture and issues important to us here in northern Minnesota, and of course, the nature of northern Minnesota. You can support that with a pledge right now. You'll make Phenology Plus and all these other programs possible with your pledge. Decide what you can afford to contribute now. Call in and make a pledge. 326-1234, 800-662-5799. Listener support is our largest single source of funding, and your pledge will help us build that funding and make our budget possible for another year. That number again, 218-326-1234 or 800-662-5799. Chell Anderson is a botanist with the DNR, and in this conversation with Jay Anderson, she talks about snow fleas, also known as springtails, and she'll bring us up to date on owls. Owls are among the first wildlife to begin their mating season in February. Here's Chell.
Snow fleas are not fleas at all, so don't let the name get you excited about what do I need to do to get rid of my snow fleas. It's not a problem.
You don't have to wear a collar when you go outside?
No, and okay. And nothing needs protecting from snow fleas. They are actually in a group of insects called the springtails. And springtails are called springtails because they have two small prongs that stick out of their abdomens. And they can fold those up against the bottom of their abdomens and then hook them close to them. And when they want to, they can release those hooks. And when the hooks are released, the prongs spring out and away from the body and propel the springtails, you know, in just any random direction, up or out, or, you know, it's very haphazard. You know, it's not a real sophisticated way of moving great distances, but it does work. And you can see that if you get up close and watch.
Well, how big are these things?
Yeah, they're about a 16th of an inch long, so very tiny. And they are kind of a blue-black in color. They have two antennae. They have two clusters of 16 eyes each. So, you know, if you got out your microscope, you could see that. But the best way to see them is in the winter because they, during warmer weather, they come up through the snowpack and they get out on the surface of the snow. And usually in fairly good numbers, like hundreds and thousands. And they look like tiny little, even tinier than a flake of pepper, you know, tiny little peppers all over the surface of the snow. Sometimes, you know, sometimes closely grouped together, sometimes more dispersed. But they definitely can catch your eye as they're, you know, they look like someone scattered dust on the snow.
Well, do you see them moving around much?
Yeah, if you just stand and watch carefully, you know, and you'll start to notice that these little flecks that look like just pieces of dirt or dust start, you know, moving around. And if you, you know, got down on your hands and knees and put your, you know, face down closer, you'd actually see them moving and see more of their shape and get a better sense of, you know, what they look like up close.
Are there other insects that are moving around? And I mean, where are they when they're not on top of the snow where I can see them?
Yeah, well, snow fleas are a really important part of the way organic material in the forest and in really any of our natural environments go through the process of decay. So springtails eat mostly decaying plant material, fungi, the parts of other dead insects and small or well decayed large large animals. And so they help process that decaying material and make it more available to as nutrients to plants that are growing in the soil. So springtails do a major job in helping move the nutrients from dead things into something more useful.
Are snow fleas around in the summer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're busy doing their work in the summer, but, you know, pretty tough to see in the summer because they're tiny and they're down there in the just at the surface and in the upper layer of the soil doing their important work.
Chell, this is the season for animal and bird courtship and mating, so tell us who's doing what in the romance department.
Oh, well, lucky me. Well, the earliest nesting bird that we have is the great horned owl. And great horned owls aren't terribly common. You know, they're not as common, say, as a barred owls, but they are here. And if you're lucky enough to be living in an area where the great horned owls live, you would be hearing them doing their courtship singing right now. The males sing, and of course they have deep booming voices that can be heard long distances. And so the females are tuning in and listening to the different males calling, and no one knows exactly how, but those voices are, you know, judged by the females. And when she is attracted to a particular male's song, she will make herself known with a repeated higher pitched, similar cadence call. And they will eventually, you know, exchange back and forth like that and eventually get in proximity to one another to where they have visual contact. And then the males will do displays by calling and sliding back and forth across branches and raising their wings. And if the female is sufficiently satisfied with what the male is exhibiting in terms of fitness and you know, good qualities as a mate, then she will start doing a call that lets him know that she wants to be fed. So that begins another stage of courtship where they form their, in many cases, reform their bonds for the mating season. And feeding your mate is a big part of that, forming that bond. So the male will start to be responsible not only for feeding for himself, but for regularly bringing food to the female so that she gets a sense of how good is he at providing for me.
Now this is all happening like now.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I can understand from what you said that this must be, for the greater horned owls anyway, really important that they can get through the snow to pick up some of those rodents that we've talked about in the past in order to not only feed themselves but to feed the mate and to then continue this whole mating ritual. Who else is doing what at this time of year?
Well, another owl that will be starting up about now with its calling is the barred owl, very common owl in our part of the world. And medium-sized owl, bars, gray bars across the chest, easy to identify. And they, you know, have a similar kind of interaction as the great horned owls. Instead of the matching calls back and forth and being kind of more polite, as I would think of it, or genteel, the barred owls will chase the females and try to get their attention that way, as well as, you know, calling them.
Now, these calls, are these the kind of calls that we associate with these species during the summer?
Yes. Yeah.
Same thing, like the who cooks for you thing.
Yes, right. For the barred owl, it's who cooks for you. And they'll do that call. They'll also do a lot of just kind of strange screeching calls, very different than, you know, the kind of standard hooting call as a part of these courtship rituals. There again, eventually the female will decide that she, you know, thinks this owl looks like a good prospect. So then she'll do this very kind of, I would say, hard on the ears call. It's kind of a rasping call. And that's her message to the males that, okay, let me see what you can do in terms of bringing home the bacon, right? And so...
Or the shrews
in this case. Yep. And so then, they have to go off and, you know, try to show off their hunting talents, which will be difficult this year. Our snowpack has a lot of crusts in it.
Are these the only birds that are doing this right now, or are other kinds of birds working?
These are the birds that are doing this right now, and they are some of the earliest nesters. The gray jays are another bird species that is very early nester and will be getting going pretty soon here with their courtship and eventual nesting. But the owls kind of start the whole thing off, and these two owls in particular are some real early birds. And, so it's great to, you know that this whole process of the world coming back to life and another generation is already getting started.
Chell Anderson is a botanist with the DNR. She spoke with Jay Anderson from WTIP Radio in Grand Marais. Listening to Phenology Plus, and it's KAXE's Fun Spiel, our end of winter fundraiser. Our Fun Spiel recognizes all the great things we have to do here in the wintertime, and some things going on around the KAXE listening area include including an interpretive snowshoe hike this Saturday at Deep Portage Learning Center between Hackensack and Longville. That's this Saturday at 1 o'clock. Snowshoes are provided, or feel free to bring your own. And the Itasca Moraine Chapter of the North Country Scenic Trail is hosting a 2-mile snowshoe hike in Itasca State Park this Saturday. That's also at 1 o'clock. Hikers should meet at the south entrance of the park. Snowshoe rental is available at the park, or bring your own snowshoes and call KAXE for more information, 218-326-1234. Phenology Plus is made possible by our listener members, our largest source of funding. We also have support from Itasca Surgical Clinic in Grand Rapids. At the Itasca Surgical Clinic, patients are provided with personal screening, diagnosis, and treatment of a full range of medical conditions, all in a caring environment. And we have support from Atchison Tire Company in Grand Rapids. Atchison Tire is locally owned for more than 90 years. Atchison Tire has offered new tires and repair services for generations of their customers, online at atchisontire.com. And our largest source of funding is our listener members. Thanks to everyone who's pledged so far over $20,000. Our goal by this Friday night is to raise $50,000 for KAXE, an independent community radio service for northern Minnesota. Every phone call counts. Every pledge amount counts. Your call is the most important one we can get next. So give us a call and show your support for this unique independent radio service. We've been broadcasting for almost 34 years, on the air since 1976, and our largest source of funding all those years has been our listener members coming through all the time. Join them and become a member now, 326-1234 or 800-662-5799. The late Gil Quall hunted and gathered wild foods in and around the Chippewa National Forest. Gil often said that by the time February rolled around, the wild food pantry and freezer were running out, and other than ice fishing, there was not much out there to harvest.
There are few wild foods available in the woods of February. Elm bark, basswood buds, and the larva of goldenrod galls are hardly sustaining and certainly unappetizing. A few frozen berries hang from the branches, but they threaten instant diarrhea if eaten afield. With a gun, I suppose, and a lot of energy, one could put a long-suffering rabbit into his bag, but that somehow seems unfair to the hare and a violation to the pristine whiteness of the snow. If one must gather, however, it is much more productive to sit in warm quarters and flush game from the windrows of his memory. This kind of sport yields a food that needs no cooking before it is ingested. Nonetheless, it must be absorbed into the convolutions of the cerebrum in order to provide nourishment. Once focused upon by the inner eye, it warms the spirit and provides grist for the philosopher that resides within each one of us. Philosophical food must be gathered in season as we go about gathering the physical kind. It is everywhere afield. It hangs from the same branch as the plum and is flushed from the same thicket as the hare. Analogues run rampant through the bushes, and illusions come out to sun themselves in secret coverts. Yet few people notice them, and even fewer bother to gather. What a waste of natural resources. Once gathered and packed into our minds, we have a stock of preserves from which we can select and draw. With these, we may play doodles or weave patterns. We may form ideas or construct philosophies. What's it all worth? Not a penny to anyone but the possessor. And to him, one good idea is worth a Cadillac, and a functional philosophy has more utility than a 3-bedroom house.
The late Gil Quall, we hear his comments from time to time on Phenology Plus. The moose population in northwestern Minnesota has crashed, and wildlife biologists aren't sure why. The number of moose in northeastern Minnesota is stable but threatened. Anytime you see a moose, you can help with the research by reporting the time and place of your sighting. There's a link to the University of Minnesota and DNR's research site, and that's at our website, kaxe.org. The Headwaters chapter of Trout Unlimited meets Tuesday, March 16th at Cattails Bar and Grill in Bemidji. There'll be a social hour at 5:30, dinner off the menu, and an evening program about Alaskan fishing opportunities with Tim Pearson of Silver Bay. Tim is an accomplished artist and fly fisherman. The program is open to everyone. For more information, call KAXE 218-326-1234. And our toll-free number is 1-800-662-5799. Those are the numbers you can call to make a pledge to Northern Community Radio. We need everyone who listens to KAXE to help support it, and you'll make this community radio service possible for another year. So give us a call. That's Phenology Plus for this Tuesday evening with John Latimer. I'm Scott Hall. Thanks for listening.
Earth horn.